Case number 20-3084, United States of America versus Frederick A. Miller, also known as Toby, appellant. Mr. Hart for the appellant, Ms. Park for the appellee.
Mr. Park, before we begin, just about the record, we have this entire panel. I will be delighted we are to be back for share that with all of us today. I'm sure we will have a good time. So I'd like to proceed.
Thank you. May I please report? My name is Dennis Hart. I'm here this morning on behalf of Frederick Miller. Again, Miller has been before this court, The early issue that is an important one, which we would like to begin our presentation with a question about mandate. Maybe the first question the court has to face, and perhaps the last question the court has to face. And that question is the application of the language of Brent in the mandate rule to the facts of this case. The fortunate presence of the computer research, I was able to tell you one of the times we were vacated here. The 2018 opinion by this court, Mr. Miller. It appeared 17 times in the opinion.
What was the word?
Vacated.
Oh, vacated.
Or in reverse, it appeared only 3 times. But when you're able to search that way, you can go to each vacate in your opinion and see what it refers to. At no time in the 2018 opinion did the panel in this court vacate his conviction for the failure of the government and the district court to satisfy the enhancement that were needed to enhance the team. They came in reverse for sometimes two different actions of it. We suggested in our brief that that may be a test for whether it meets the remedy. That when they came, the court can consider everything. The first means an ethical step back to remedy the problem this court saw in the original sentence. We may have a second test, we'll get to a little bit later, because we just have a number of vacant cases also. Secondly, we believe the government's supposed that the sentencing meter in Mr. Miller's case was back to zero after the 2018 hearing. We don't believe it yet. We believe that our mandate goes back two steps
under what?
Under red.
What?
Red language, I think it's very restricted, significantly scored up in the talent. But it applies to the government as well. We believe the district court should only go back to 2 steps for the enhancement, not back to zero, not start at zero at the ground floor. If the court agrees with the appellant, then the district court erred in its sentencing in 2020.
Mr. Hart, the argument is that if the enhancements are invalid, then the sentencing on the RICO count, which previously the enhancement was life, because the enhancement is unsupportable, that makes newly relevant an argument for fairness. So why is the vacature of the RICO count and the decision that the enhancement could be supported enough under this particular remand and all its limitations, nonetheless consistent with what the district court did on you?
Well, I would disagree with the word newly and relevant. Let me explain why I disagree with the word newly. This is not new information. This is information from the 2006 and 2007 trials. So everyone knew it. It's not relevant because the mandate from this court was essentially fulfill your obligations for the weapons enhancement and for management. It was across the T's and not the I's directed by this court. Everyone thought the district court could do that. There really was no serious doubt that they couldn't do it. can't speak for the government. We thought it was just not a victory to be ignored in 2018. But rather a roadmap before we do it correct the next time. That certainly was the view of the government last year. Almost a year before Mr. Miller was sentenced, the government maintained that it had enough evidence to support the weapons of him, the managerial did get through, I believe there were four assistants on the case. They submitted several sentencing memorandums. The first two were quite lengthy, all argued that there was sufficient evidence to support weapons and management. Gave the opportunity for the court to adopt that. The court did not adopt that because the last sentencing memorandum for the government agreed that they could not meet their burden of proof. Thus, it's not newly, it's not relevant, because this court directed the district court to cross the T's. It could not cross the T's, and that's a failure of proof by the government, rather than directed by this court. I'd like to address one of the cases the government cited in this 28J letter. I think his name is Henderson. In that, it's just in this 28J letter submitted by the government earlier this week. It's a drug trial in which a peer offender enhancement was vacated by the court, I believe it was the Fourth Circuit. They concluded that when he was resentenced and given a life sentence under a variance, that they could do that and did not violate the Fourth Circuit mandate because the government was not given the opportunity for the Fourth Circuit to argue for this variance in the first sentence of the Mr. Shuck. That's a very good illustration of what happened here. Remember that the appellant was sentenced in 2007 to life in prison, mandatory weapons. Three, the government had no chance to argue that too. But he was resentenced after remand by this court in 2016 to RICO life in prison. RICO does not give him mandatory life in prison that the CCE county did. And as a result, that was the first opportunity for the government to argue there's a possibility for variance for whatever reason. They did not. Since 2016, the government has always maintained that this is a guideline case. In the variance until the last minute before sentencing, and that they argued there were sufficient facts under the guidelines to meet the burden for life in prison under the guidelines.
So, Mr. Hart, is your position that the government, even if it might be duplicative of its principal ground here, the enhancement, that the government has to, in order to preserve them, make all potential arguments for enhancement and or variance at the first opportunity? In other words, in this case, in 2016, where it was looking for a basis to go to the higher sentence, that unless the government rolls out every argument at that point, those arguments are effectively
worthless. No, I think they have to bring out their best case. Their view was their best case with the guideline sentence in 2016, maintain that throughout 2019 for the district court judge, and then finally agreed that they couldn't make the case. They made that bet. They have to lose.
So they make their best case. If their best case fails, I think that is what I was asking, although you answered no. If their best case fails, if they want a fallback, they need to have articulated that in 2016.
They do. Otherwise, they waited. Because they had that opportunity and chose not to pursue. They report, excuse my grammar, talk to the master. That doesn't come out the same way it does in person.
And I think the answer is that there isn't any precedent directly on that, either from this court or any other court. Your closest case that best supports that position is what?
Well, I'm saying the Chuck case that I just mentioned is an example where the court said, no, the government didn't have a chance to argue that because it was a mandatory. If they hadn't, it implies that if they had that chance, then they would have violated the mandate that the court gave it the second time around.
Before you sit down, let me just ask you to talk about life without parole. But my understanding is there's no parole in the system anymore. Can you clarify what you're referring to?
Life without parole is an easy way to abbreviate that. Prisoners are given certain benefits, such as good time, taking credit for good time, you can't be released early based on good time. Prisoners are sent to supervised release, which many people think is the same thing as the content. So without an end term, that has significant effects on the person. Thank you. Ms. Clark.
In court, Pam Park, on behalf of the United States. District Court either do not violate this court mandate in order to by imposing upward variance and resentencing conflict with this. Under REN, on remand and resentencing, District Court may consider only such new arguments as are made newly relevant to the Court of Appeals decision by reasoning or causing fault. Here, Miller 2 mandate, the first mandate for resentencing, firearm enhancement, leader of organized enhancement, and the legal conspiracy center. Based on Miller 2 opinion, the prosecutor did not seek the enhancement because the court did not apply. The result of this court's decision in Miller 2 was a lower guidelines range where the upper end was no longer life imprisonment, which made the government's request for an upward variance in 2020 resentencing newly wrong. The government had no reason to ask for an upward variance, either in the original 2007 sentencing, the statutory mandatory minimum for CCE for life, nor did it have a reason or incentive to act for a upward variance at the initial 2016 resentencing, but the district court had determined the actual guidelines range for the conspiracy was 360 months of life in prison. The district court could therefore consider the government's argument for an upward variance for 2020.
We don't have a case supporting that position. Doing which can assume a lot to find contrary to your opponent's argument that you don't have an obligation to make your alternative best case in the first time that you need to make up the gap.
Yeah, Ren talked about reason and other questions for the
next topic. Could you speak a little loud? Oh,
I'm sorry. Sorry, Your Honor.
Are you going to share a microphone there?
I apologize. I will try to speak.
It makes all the difference in the world.
I'm sorry?
It makes all the difference in the world.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Thank goodness I don't have a Mac to make it work. But Ren talks about reason or incentive. And what appellant seems to be saying is we have to make all our arguments, all our alternative arguments, at the beginning, initial sentencing, or else we're going to lose them all. That's simply not what Ren says. And here, after 2016 sentencing, after the district court calculated the guidelines range, he turned to the parties and he said, any arguments that counsel would like to make about whether the court should depart from the guidelines under the 3553 factors all here. And that's at page 12 of the 2016 transcript. Clearly at that point, the government had no incentive to ask for the variance under the 3553 factors when the upper end of the guidelines range was what? It would make it awkward to ask the court at that point, well, in case this gets reversed on appeal, these enhancements can be reversed on appeal, we would ask you to make an alternative finding first upper variance.
But Ms. Park, that the part of the transcript that you say actually seems to cut the other way, because the district judge himself was contemplating that notwithstanding that the upper bound of the guideline sentence with the enhancements was life, you might nonetheless want to make variance arguments. And didn't. The government didn't make variance arguments at that point.
Yes. I think when he, practically speaking, I think that was really addressed to appellants at that point. And when he said the court, I think he means variance because he was addressing the 3553 factors. He just wanted to go, but
I think that was correct.
Yes. So I would suggest to the court that to ask the government to make an argument, alternative argument, to upwardly depart from life, they're upwardly varying from life, there's really no such thing. And that's basically the end of the map.
I see the logic of your position. But we're all lawyers, and we all know that the primary grounds on which we start the defendants that we want might in fact be vulnerable. And where it is in the judgment of the government that the enhancements, for example, might be unsupported, why wouldn't it make sense to say that the government needs to make its best judgment, do belt and suspenders, as lawyers often do, and go forward with that assurance what are the available grounds to make up the gap?
The difficulty is, at what point do you say it was shaky enough that you should have made an objection? It seems like you're asking the court to go back and look to see whether the opportunity had risen to a certain point where the government should have done it. Trump seems to be saying he objected to these enhancements. So because he objected, the government at that point should have known this might be reversed on appeal and made their request for upper variance then. I just don't know. I think the Venn standard is really workable. It's no reason or no incentive. It's a practical
thing. The difficulty is this sort of infinite regrets, the second bite of the apple, the third bite of the apple, that, the district court tries one thing, has the government has no incentive to make sure that it's confident in the various grounds that it proposes for variance and or enhancements, because it knows always if there's a shortfall and bring something else up and then bring something else up. And here I understand it was the court that brought up the ultimate basis for the upward variance, more so than the government. But the difficulty from the defendant's perspective is it's an infinite moving target, infinite bites at the apple to get the sentence right. And that may be, that's plausible system. The question is the system that we have.
Certainly not in the system is adopted. I mean, I think what Your Honor is talking about is a noble approach when you have a resentencing. Anything, you can add any arguments or make any arguments or present any evidence we could have at the original sentencing. And some jurisdictions have adopted that. The purpose when this court adopted then was the reason was to limit this. Kind of, you always get first bite, second bite, third bite. You can only deal with issues that arise in the correction of the sentence resulting from court of appeals decision. That's essentially the heart of the rent. And they rely on the Seventh Circuit case when they talk about adopting this waiver approach, this no-go approach. And that seems to me to strike a fair middle ground because it doesn't seem fair to allow litigants to have to make every single alternative argument at the original sentence, even if other parties may object to the enhancement. But it does say if you had a strong reason to make it right then and there, you should have. In this situation, where the upper end of the guidelines was life, the government simply had no reason or incentive to ask for a variance going upward on alternative basis.
Let me ask you about the district judge's reliance on the Oguchi murder attempt. It's troubling that occurred, at least appears to have occurred. We don't want findings to the contrary, that it appears to have occurred before Mr. Miller joined the years. How is it permissible for the district court to take into account conduct that is both quite notable, hard to see as just marginal or harmless, that was engaged with you before Miller was involved, and you're not even sure what the law is?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would say, well, this part here, this is not a case where the district court would make incorporate that conduct into the guidelines calculation, where he would have to find relevant conduct and particular time. Here, he was doing a more broad assessment of the evidence, and under the 3553 factors. And this court has said in Ransom, the court is not required to make findings of the guidelines imposed on the variance, and it could properly apply broader 3553A considerations in assessing the evidence and determining whether the variance is warranted. So that's what the district court was doing here. And when you look at the language of the statement of reasons, and I believe it's pretty much verbatim in the transcript, when he talks about Luigi, he says people like Mr. Luigi were previously injured as a result of the conspiracy that he killed by.
So it's Alex. So we have other similar acts that the Luigi attempted murder could have been a shorthand for that occurred during the time.
I don't know the shorthand for. I know there were other murders.
For example,
other murders, they did not, district court did not rely on them.
I thought the argument you were making was that he referred to the Oluchi attempted murder as a signifier of a kind of harm that this conspiracy visited on the public or participants or what have you. But then you seem to be saying, no, that's not your point.
No, that is my point. I mean, you take a broader view of everything. It didn't really matter that how it was involved with Oluchi murder. It was the fact that this is the nature of the conspiracy. He joined, we don't know at what point, he joined and he led. And the Oluchi murder just kind of underscored the type of actions that this conspiracy was capable of. And you know,
so are you saying there isn't another attempted murder or violent assault incident that you would point to after when we know Mr. Miller was involved?
Your Honor, there are other murders, at least one other murder that I know was charged and there was evidence upon it. I do not know off the top of my head time frame of when this murder occurred.
That was going to work through it?
Yeah, through it. I think that means.
Okay, yeah. That was 2001, and that was in Ireland. was termed as being an accessory after the fact, and he was acquitted on one.
But the point here I'm just trying to make is the court was looking at the Ricci murder, the other conduct that Helen did not himself see. The incident with Bradford, that was intimately, you know, where he misused his private investigator that was all in, and I don't think it's correct. I think the point the court was trying to make was, you know, he's looking at the nature of the defense, the overall harm caused by conspiracy. And, you know, in light of the attempted murder of Bellucci, Helen was offered to kill Valentino Palmer on behalf of Bradford. Was not an isolated incident in the conspiracy.
Do we have record evidence that Mr. Miller was even aware of the original murder attempt?
I don't believe there is.
So it wouldn't bear at all on what was Mr. Miller's intention, whether he was just trying to butter up Mr. Brennan and talk tough, or whether he was the kind of person that might have actually followed through, which I thought was what you were suggesting.
Yes, I'm looking at the murder in a broader sense. Not so much that he knew that it happened, but just that this is an example. Ireland was very involved in the Ricci murder for sure. And Ireland was actually outside the parking lot when Helen went in to see Bradford, and actually Bradford wanted to talk to Hyman, so he's very much involved in what's going on with Bradford too. I think the point is, this is a kind of conspiracy Hyman and Helen are running, and we know what they did, and what they did was murder people who stood in the way of their goals, and there was nothing that the threat that he made, offer to kill Valentino Plummer, was very real. And certainly, it's reasonable to infer that Jay Bradford thought it was real, because he immediately started backtracking when the cop.
And I'm not really questioning that interaction with some. It's really the district court reminds me of Rucci's murder attempt. If we were to think it was impermissible for the district court to rely on that Urugi murder attempt because it A, predated Miller's involvement, and B, there's no evidence that he was aware of it. What then?
I think the court was looking at all these facts, and the use of the private investigator credential. That was certainly atypical, and that was an incident that was repeated by the prosecutor at the 2017, 2016, 2017. It was a consistent theme.
Right. So there are other factors,
yes.
But what's legally available to us? We don't know whether the district court was even aware, because the district court on its own came up with this motion and the government briefed it. Mr. Park hadn't responded to it. And he came up with, we don't even know if the district court was aware that this murder had happened perhaps many months or a year or more before Mr. Miller was involved. Maybe it was central to his consideration, and he would never have meant to rely on that if he knew that there was no nexus to Mr. Miller. What do we do? Can we say, oh, harmless error, and just affirm?
Well, the mandate, we are now talking about procedural reasons.
What was that
like? I think we move on to the reasonableness of the sentence, not the mandate. I was going to say the mandate issue is plain error. How did ever oppose the upward variance based on the fact that it violated the mandate? If the court thinks a piece of the puzzle or the factor that he used is problematic, I suppose the court could remand with instructions to not consider that and to redo the calculus and whether that changes. But I would really emphasize to the court, this court has stated when you're talking about the district court's consideration of 3553 factors, there's the kind of evidence the court can look at. It's very broad. And here, this district court judge sat through two very long trials involving him. He saw all the evidence
situation we want to see having to figure out whether we should discuss it.
And Your Honor, if the Supreme Court decision Irizarry addresses that, I understand because for variances, the rule for no giving parties notice that exists for departure does not support Supreme Court held, does not extend to variance. And the Supreme Court recognized there are going to be instances of unfair trial to the defendant, having to the government. But the solution is not to extend the notice requirement to variance. The solution is for parties to ask for agreements or make an objection. And as far as I can see in the record, I don't believe Ms. McKellen objected on these grounds. And this court came nicely, I think, if on point. There, the court, district court, imposed an upward variance. There was not notice was given, but the court said he could have asked for continuance. Or he could have objected to the factual, to what he believed were factual errors, but he did not do that.
My final question is, can you cast light on this, life without parole? I just understand it.
Life without parole. Parole is abolished in front of us. So life means life. You don't like that parole. I mean, there's no way to get out for life. It's essentially my understanding of the system. All that's in the bottom.
Is there a group of guidelines equivalent of life that's numerical, something months? And is that what
the I think Mr. Shepard quote said the sentence commission has determined it to be 170 months, I believe. I'm not sure when that, I don't think that amount of time that I'm wondering. During the other 170 months, I don't think you get released. I think that's just a way to quantify what life usually means. I suppose it's an average, but I'm not sure enough. But that was my understanding. It's not my understanding that you reach 170 months and then that people like so you get released.
I guess one way of understanding what Mr. Hart is asking for is that as a life sentence, perhaps the district judge would be able to determine it a life sentence. Obviously, that's the argument. That's it. So thank you for your.
If there are no further questions, we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you very much. It really was a pleasure to be back here.
Council had no time remaining.
Okay, 2 minutes. Thank you. 2 minutes on the following course. The 2018 Miller opinion did not disagree with the enhancement. In fact, it went out of its way to say, we don't disagree with the enhancement. It went out of its way to say it doesn't cast any doubt on the evidence to support the enhancement. The only thing the 2018 Miller opinion did was tell the judge to cross the T's and dot the I's, and that to be sufficient for this court. It was not the decision of this court that the district court could not make that determination. The decision not to cross the T's and not to dot the I's was made by the district court, not by the 2018 Miller opinion. The district court is what made that decision that prevented an excuse to give the appellant life under the guidelines. So to say that the red language permits it because of the result, that was not the result of this court's 2018 opinion in Miller. It was the result of the district court's decision that it could not meet the requirements of the statute. The second point I'd like to make is we would vigorously disagree with respectful counsel's description of this was a case of the murder being pursued in their way. That was her characterization of what the district court thought it was doing. For the Urucci murder, for example, there is no evidence of that in the trial. Every violent act Mr. Miller was accused of, he was acquitted at trial. That's a broad over generalization. And the question was, the district court had seen the evidence and it knew best what to do.
When you say he was acquitted of every violent act, what are you referring to?
Well, there were some assaults,
They were involved in the Rico Predicate Act. There may have been something in the conspiracy count, and I wasn't proud of him. But none of them came up as part of the appeal because he was acquitted here.
But as you know, in sentencing,
yes,
acquitted conduct can be considered.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt the court. Yes, I did. But that's why he was not involved in the sentencing originally, because it was never brought up by the government in, say, 2016, when we believe it should have been. The final point I'd like to make is that I don't think this court will find in either briefs any case in this circuit where there's been a variance of life without parole. And the reason for that is because district courts in this circuit have never dealt with it. And there's a reason for that, because it's the most extreme measure a district court can do, and it requires the most extreme case that's justified by the district court to impose that penalty, and no court in this jurisdiction found that to be the case. And I'm looking at
you were appointed by the court to represent Mr. Miller. We thank you for your assistance.
Thank you.